You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA, news and commentary.
October the 29th, 2020. Yes, the election is a big thing. We want to stay focused on that. Yes, there's concern about COVID. But there's another story that I do not want to be ignored. New satellite images are showing that in Iran, they are building a new road into a previous nuclear facility. Tehran building this road, according to the satellite lab report, and it appears that construction equipment along the road that they're now in the process of tunneling into the mountain and maybe plan to hide some new nuclear development project there. And that would not be a nuclear program to enrich their country and get them out of living on rocks, but to build nuclear weapons. We cannot look away and forget that. U.S. economy growing at the fastest pace ever recorded in the third quarter, expanding at 33.1%. That's great news. And it's only because we're beginning to open up our economy finally. President Trump and his rival Biden are holding dueling campaign rallies in Florida. That is a crucial battleground state. We're five days from the actual election date. Both candidates are going to be in Tampa, hours apart. Trump should be arriving in Tampa for his address within the next 20 minutes or so. Biden will not show up until 5:30 Central Time later. 29 delegates up for grabs, one of the biggest prizes on Election Day. That Electoral College. Oh, and word coming from Hillary Clinton. I'm a member of the Electoral College. I'll be an electorate. I'm looking forward to voting for Joe Biden. The woman who says the Electoral College should be abolished is now a member, and it's not unsurprising, with her standing in the state of New York. Cuomo is also, Governor Cuomo, and some other big-name figures, Senator Schumer. They're all going to be members of the Electoral College for New York State. But I just find it funny. They want to get rid of the Electoral College because it's useless. It's outlived its purpose. They want to get rid of it. But they know that's the way the game's played because that's the way the Constitution set it up. By the way, yesterday Trump was in a rally, two different rallies in Arizona, drawing thousands. Kamala Harris was in Tucson. She drew, according to some of the reports, maybe 100. It was an outdoor parking lot and maybe 50 cars in the lot. Put two people in each car, that might be 100. Oh, all right, you want to go four? All right, four times 50. You can do the math. In the meantime, just days before the presidential election, millions of mail ballots have yet to be returned in key battleground states. There is going to be a big battle over this when we get to Election Day and past as to how ballots are going to be counted, who's going to get the benefit of late votes. A Michigan gun shop owner is saying one of the issues that's still as big, at least is what they're saying in their area, in Grand Rapids area, protection, violence in the streets, says we're selling more and more guns, and many of the buyers are single mothers coming in to buy guns to protect their children. Well, we've heard California Governor Newsom say, I'm not going to automatically distribute a vaccine for coronavirus if it comes from the Trump administration. Now, three more Democrat governors are stepping up and saying the same thing. That's in addition, of course, to New York Governor Cuomo said, we're not going to take it. So now you've got California Governor Newsom, Governor Cuomo, and you've got Oregon Governor Brown, Washington Governor Inslee, Nevada Governor Sisolak, all Democrats, all getting on board saying, we're not going to give the vaccine to our people if it comes through the Trump administration. The L.A. Dodgers say there will not be a World Series championship parade for the time being. Said we're looking to have a World Championship parade for them, but we can't now. We want to have one for them. And we also, of course, want to have one for the Lakers, who won their championship. LeBron James says we should have a parade. Mayor Garcetti said we will have a parade. We will celebrate the Lakers and, on their own day, the Dodgers. But for right now, we just can't. We are so fearful of COVID, we have to remain locked down. We can't do anything. Can't do anything. We can be in the streets mobbing and looting, party poopers.
Larry Connors, USA, news and commentary.
We are slowly returning to normal as we knew life before COVID. Still, you need to be cautious. Make sure your business, school, place of worship are safe. Now, that's where Wellington Environmental can help. You can schedule professional fogging or deep cleaning with just a phone call. I'll give you a number. But first, you should know Wellington Environmental now offers fogging equipment you can use. These individual units are in high demand. Wellington has them available for now. They cost about $500, but my listeners get a big price break, a $100 discount. Save $100 just by saying you heard about it on Larry Connors USA. For more information on getting your personal fogging device or to schedule professional fogging, 314-644-4930. 314-644-4930. Be well with Wellington Environmental.
I want to thank my friends at John Bill Roofing for sponsoring this segment of Larry Connors USA. John Bill Roofing, covering homes, businesses throughout the Midwest with the best quality, lowest price. John Bill Roofing. Call 1-800-NEW-ROOF. 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
Never would have hitchhiked to Birmingham if it hadn't been for love. Never would have called the train to Louisiana if it hadn't been for love. Never would have run through the blinding rain without $1 to my name if it hadn't been, if it hadn't been for love. Never would have seen the trouble that I'm in if it hadn't been for love.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Mr. Dorsey, who the hell elected you and put you in charge of what the media are allowed to report and what the American people are allowed to hear?
That is Senator Ted Cruz, Republican of Texas, on the attack against Twitter CEO Jack Dorsey, dealing with his platform censoring the New York Post story about the Biden family, the Hunter Biden computer, the Hunter Biden emails, and the alleged connection in those emails to Joe Biden getting money from some of the deals that Hunter was putting together in deals and arrangements he got only because of his last name and daddy was the VP at the time. And when the New York Post broke the story the other day, started running it, Twitter immediately shut down the New York Post Twitter account. And Facebook shut down their Facebook account. They just said, we're not going to allow you to disseminate information we haven't checked. We don't know. It might be false. It might be fraud. They never raised a single question like that when it came to the P dossier, supposedly linking Trump to something in Russia and the Russian collusion story. They never stopped at anything. And as I reported in the last hour, as we were talking about this author of the book, A Warning, published under not his name, but the pseudonym Anonymous, now coming forward and admitting who he was, they never questioned it, yet you would be led to believe by them that it was some high-ranking person inside the White House spilling his guts about all the nasty deeds underway. It's not. It's some little lackey kid, basically, who had a nice position, got cut from it because he wasn't measuring up for some reason, and then suddenly he becomes an enemy. He runs out to Google and joins them, and suddenly he's on board with all the leftists and decides to write the book. And nobody questioned it at the time. But this stuff, when you got documented evidence that the New York Post says it has the computer and the emails. The FBI admits it has the computer, not talking about what's in it or what they're investigating. Bob Alinsky, an insider that was part of the deals they were all trying to put together, said, I've got the same emails that appear on that computer, and I didn't send them. Hunter Biden sent them. I can show you. And he offered all that information. And the mainstream media, and I'm not talking about just the social media now, I'm talking about CNN and NNN and MSNBC, New York Times, Washington Post, ignoring it. They still, to my knowledge, have not done a single story on the Hunter Biden computer and what's in it. Not even running a story saying we're investigating it. Not even running a story saying we have investigated, it's all false. They're running nothing. But the social media outreach, that is one of the quickest and fastest ways to get things out. And the New York Post was trying to promote its story via its Twitter account and Facebook. And they were shut down. Those operations and social media got shut down. So this hearing yesterday that began with the Senate Commerce Committee wanted to look at big tech and what they're doing and how they're abusing their power and authority. Part of this rest up on the 230 section of the FCC, of the Decency Code. 230 that was written in basically to help set up the internet companies and give them immunity from lawsuits if something libelous, slanderous appears on their platform. There's a reason to have that to some extent, but they need to modify it and look at it in a different way. I mean, anything that appears in the paper, unless you're writing to the editorial section, would be product of the paper, unless you're a reporter with the paper. Same thing with television and radio. If they're putting anything on, it's that person's view. And, of course, sometimes they have paid programming. They always announce the views expressed by this person is not necessarily the view of a station or management. That's their little way to step around it. But if they put something on that's libelous and slanderous, you can't sue the newspaper, the radio station directly for it because, let me correct that, you can sue them for it because they allowed it to go on. But Facebook and Twitter and all the other social media giants, they have immunity from such a lawsuit. So that's a big part of what the hearings are about. But the other part that comes is we're seeing exhibited now how they control and throttle back any information that they deem you shouldn't see. Here's how Senator Cruz identifies big tech.
The three witnesses we have before this committee today collectively pose, I believe, the single greatest threat to free speech in America and the greatest threat we have to free and fair elections. Google has more power than any company on the face of the planet. And the antitrust concerns are real. The impact of Google is profound. And I expect we will have continued and ongoing discussions about Google's abuse of that power and its willingness to manipulate search outcomes to influence and change election results.
We talked about that to some extent yesterday. I mentioned the new Netflix documentary out, Social Dilemma. And members of Facebook, Twitter, Google, others that had been in active roles as they were being activated, they've admitted that this thing has gotten out of control and it's not being used the way we envisioned it, that there are a lot of good things that come with social media, but there are a lot of bad things. Censorship is a bad thing. And Google, as Senator Cruz was referring to, we also talked about yesterday in the sense that if you Google Joe Biden and Hunter emails, it may not give you anything. Or it will redirect you to something else. If you misspell Biden, if you put two D's in, it may not show anything. I mean, there's so many things. You could sit there and test it yourself. But they have ways to never get you to the New York Post article. If they can work it that way, that's what they've been doing. And that's what Cruz is saying. And yes, it is election interference, because if you can't get the information to make your own decision, then you're basically flying blind. And, of course, his prime target yesterday was Jack Dorsey, founder of Twitter.
Mr. Dorsey, does Twitter have the ability to influence elections?
No.
You don't believe Twitter has any ability to influence elections?
No, we are one part of a broad spectrum of communication channels that people have.
So you're testifying to this committee right now that Twitter, when it silences people, when it censors people, when it blocks political speech, that has no impact on elections?
People have choice of other communication channels with which...
Not if they don't hear information. If you don't think you have the power to influence elections, why do you block anything?
Well, we have policies that are focused on making sure that more voices on the platform are possible. We see a lot of abuse and harassment, which ends up silencing people and having them leave from the platform.
All right, Mr. Dorsey, I find your opening questions, your opening answers absurd on their face.
I agree fully with Senator Cruz. Absurd. As you said, you're testifying that when Twitter silences people, when it censors them, when it blocks political speech, it has no impact on elections. And Dorsey said, well, they've got other choices, other communications. They don't have to rely strictly on Twitter. There are other sources available. Let's acknowledge that. But let's not ignore and overlook the fact that, yeah, when Twitter starts shutting things down and will not make you give you a link and provide information about it, then you're shut off. I mean, one of the first things they did was shut down the Twitter account, the New York Post, so they could not tweet out, hey, look at the story we got. Come look at it and get the information. No, I agree with Senator Cruz. Dorsey, your answers are absurd on their face. Now, the claim that Dorsey is trying to make, well, we have standards. We don't want to let hacked materials get on the air. We're worried that, I mean, on our Twitter feed, it might be hacked, and therefore we can't let it go unchecked. If it's hacked material, we can't use it. It's part of our standard policy. Let me tell you something, folks. It's standard only in the way that they want to interpret it for their benefit and for the benefit of the Democrats and currently Joe Biden. And Senator Cruz jumped on that issue.
So in your view, if it's unclear the source of a document, and in this instance, the New York Post documented what it said the source was, which it said it was a laptop owned by Hunter Biden that had been turned into a repair store. So they weren't hiding what they claimed to be the source. Is it your position that Twitter, when you can't tell the source, blocks press stories?
No, not at all. Our team made a fast decision. The enforcement action, however, of blocking URLs, both in tweets and in DM, in direct messages, we believe was incorrect, and we changed it.
Today, right now, the New York Post is still blocked from tweeting 2 weeks later.
Yes, they have to log into their account, which they can do at this minute, delete the original tweet, which fell under our original enforcement actions, and they can tweet the exact same material in the exact same article, and it would go through.
Do you see what they're doing? We're not letting it go through because it's still under our ban at this. They can remove the ban. Understand that? They can suddenly pull all the restriction off and say, let it go through as it originally was put up. But they're telling Twitter, if you want that tweet to go out, you can put it up again, but you have to go back in, log into your account, delete the original tweet because it was fell under our original enforcement actions, which we admit we made hastily and we were wrong. But when you do all that, then you can go back on and do what you need to do. That sounds like blackmail or extortion, that you either do it this way or it doesn't get on. And then this idea about hacked materials. Hacked materials suddenly is a warning flag. Well, Senator Cruz said, I think we have evidence that you don't care if it's damning to the Trump administration.
Did Twitter block the distribution of the New York Times' story a few weeks ago that purported to be based on copies of President Trump's tax returns?
We didn't find that a violation of our terms of service and this policy in particular, because it was reporting about the material. It wasn't distributing the material.
Okay, well, that's actually not true. They posted what they purported to be original source materials, and federal law, federal statute makes it a crime, a federal felony, to distribute someone's tax returns against their knowledge. So that material was based on something that was distributed in violation of federal law, and yet Twitter gleefully allowed people to circulate that. But when the article was critical of Joe Biden, Twitter engaged in rampant censorship and silencing.
And they did. Because it was critical of Trump. And they were more than willing to run it. And they didn't care if it was hacked or not. They let it run. And Cruz pointed out, no, actually, the New York Times was putting out what they said were original source materials, and under federal law and federal statute, that'd be a crime, a federal felony, to distribute someone's tax returns without their knowledge. And Twitter let that go through. They didn't care how the New York Times got it, but they got it. Let's run it. Now, you're hearing a lot of breakup in their talk going back and forth because they're having to do it via Zoom or something like that. They couldn't actually do it in the conference room because everybody's so afraid of COVID. At least Jack Dorsey is. But there's still the issue of Twitter censorship. We'll take a break when we come back. Let's take one more look at how they're trying to explain why they do what they do.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
So again, in the conversation of Senator Cruz interrogating Jack Dorsey, Twitter CEO, about blocking the Twitter account of the New York Post, Dorsey said, well, no, they can do it. They can use it. They can go in. All they have to do is go back and log into their account, remove the tweet that they originally put out regarding the Hunter Biden email and computers, and then repost it because the old one is still being flagged. And until they go in and remove that one, then they won't be able to do anything. But they can put up the same information that got flagged because we changed how we would do with it. In other words, you got to do it the way we say, or we're not going to let it on. Twitter could easily remove the war and just open it up. They could. Don't think they couldn't. And one of the op-ed editors for the New York Post said, what we're facing right now is high-tech racketeering. We're being blackmailed the way an old mob boss would do. He said they want to claim the information was hacked. They don't know. They've never asked. Why do we have to delete our tweets? It's a recovered laptop. And they are making their decision that it's hacked and they're not going to let it go on. And if we want to get back on, we got to go in and remove the tweet that they suddenly put the lock on, remove it, and then we can get back on. He said, why do we have to go and do that? Excellent question. Well, it follows exactly what Senator Cruz was saying in talking to Jack Dorsey, Twitter CEO, yesterday, at how they are practicing actively censorship.
So Twitter takes the view you can censor the New York Post, you can censor Politico, presumably you can censor the New York Times or any other media outlet. Mr. Dorsey, who the hell elected you and put you in charge of what the media are allowed to report and what the American people are allowed to hear? And why do you persist in behaving as a Democratic super PAC, silencing views to the contrary of your political beliefs?
And Dorsey later said, we don't do that. The evidence is right there in front of you, Jack. Speaking of evidence right in front of you, Joe Biden yesterday briefly faced reporters. And we're less than 24 hours after Bob Alinsky had talked in great detail about the connections to Hunter Biden and how Jim Biden, was Joe's brother, was tied into the deal, and how even he had a meeting with Joe Biden over it. He met with reporters. Not one reporter, not one, asked a question about the Hunter Biden emails or computer. Not one. They wouldn't ask the question. Does that not tell you everything? Another reporter tried to corner Jim Biden outside his home, and from a distance, he said, I don't want to comment about anything, have no answer, and I don't want to comment. Well, that's fine. Go after Jim, but why not the main guy, the guy that's at the head of the Democrat ticket that's named in all this? Reporters don't have the cojones to do that, or they bought and paid for it in the pocket. That's exactly what it is. And by the way, Tucker Carlson says we had some damning documents linked to Hunter Biden that were supposed to be delivered to us. They never got here. They disappeared. No one can tell us where and what happened to them. That could be a developing story. Dr. Pham is going to join us and bring us up to speed about what we know about COVID and what precautions you should continue, and maybe you can say we're better off now.
You can email Larry at LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com. LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
In the last few minutes, Governor Andrew Cuomo, Democrat in New York, appearing on ABC's The View, and he says, I'm holding Trump responsible for every coronavirus death in this country. Every coronavirus death. What about those 20,000 plus that died in the nursing homes that you sent them to under your orders, Governor Cuomo? Oh, well, he's saying now that's a conspiracy. That's a conspiracy against me. Dr. Kevin Pham joining us. He's with the Heritage Foundation, has numerous articles he's done with Real Clear Health, the Daily Signal. He's been focusing on COVID-19 mask wearing, vaccine development and treatments. Dr. Pham, glad to have you back on board with us, sir.
Glad to be back. Thanks so much for having me.
Well, I took a look at an article you wrote, and I want to break down this article in different pieces. And one of the things the doctor pointed out, that he said, we have learned a great deal about COVID since it reached America. The aim was never to achieve zero case transmission. And he says, as the pandemic went on month after month, it's easy to assume nothing much has changed. But it has. We're making more progress than many people realize. Now, let's begin with one of the things you brought up, Regeneron. Explain the progress with that and the value of it, please.
The Regeneron is what's called monoclonal. Actually, it's two or three different monoclonal antibodies. They're calling it a polyclonal antibody. What that is it's similar to what we were doing with convalescent plasma, where they would take the blood of people who had gotten the disease and then develop antibodies and then infuse that into another person who is currently sick. So rather than just take someone's whole blood and then find out all the antibodies, what they're doing is they're taking the recipe for those antibodies and then building that up from scratch. And getting a serum of that and then injecting that into other people. So that way you don't need people who have been sick to use this, and they can produce it if they ramp up their production. The idea is to inject this into somebody, infuse it into somebody who has an earlier stage of the virus, and so you can fight off the virus before it becomes worse. And the president, he has said that he wants to make this free of charge to anybody who has COVID-19.
And he's an example, the prime example, the most public example, someone taking it.
He certainly is a very high-profile individual, and it's pretty remarkable his recovery. He's not exactly a young man, and he's not very fit, let's say. And so that he recovered so fast, and apparently, and it seems like he recovered completely. He's very vigorous right now. Suggests that the treatment course, it doesn't necessarily mean that the Regeneron was responsible for it, but the course of treatment that he had, it seemed to have worked.
Well, the other thing you point out, that, again, we're talking about the article you wrote, that we were making more progress than many realize. And one of the key things is we're learning who's at the greater risk of dying. Now, in the beginning, everybody had, you know, how bad is this? Well, I don't want my child getting it. I mean, grandparents or me. I mean, we really had no parameters. But we now have a pretty good lockdown on who would be more susceptible, correct?
That is correct. At the beginning of this pandemic, we thought that, as with many other respiratory viruses, we thought that the very young and the very old were at the highest risk. But what we're finding out is that the very young, between 1 and maybe 20 or so, below 1, they're still at fairly high risk because they're so tiny. But then children in general just have a very low risk of complications, mortality. And it seems like they even have low risk of getting infected with this. So all of the risk, it really is concentrated in those who are above 85. And then above 65, you start to have increased risk. But that's where all the risk of mortality or complications is centered around.
Now, I don't want to get you into the political battle and the war of words involving Governor Cuomo and President Trump and anything else along that line. But as a doctor, with what you know about this, would you advise anyone who is COVID-19 to be placed, if they're elderly, into a nursing home with other elderly patients, or if they are found to be positive in that nursing home, to just keep them there? Is that good medical science?
No, absolutely not. And to be as charitable as I can be to the governor of New York, if he was trying to preserve hospital capacity and then trying to discharge COVID patients out of hospital so that more can come in, then, you know, I can kind of understand the motivation for that. But they had field hospitals, they converted the Javits Center, they had the hospital ship come up, the Mercy, I believe it was. Patients could have been discharged there rather than sent back into the nursing homes, where we knew, there's very little that we knew from the beginning of this pandemic. One of the things that we knew for certain was that it affects the very old very much. And even the CDC had published early mortality data that showed increased risk for those who are elderly several days or weeks before that public health order from the New York Health Department that said nursing homes are not able to reject patients who have COVID-19.
And let's talk about and break out COVID testing positive and reference to what translates COVID deaths. And there's a big difference. And the New York Times just out with a story saying hospitals, and I guess they're trying to talk about all across the nation, are straining an estimated 46% spike in hospitalized COVID-19 patients. Now, I assume if you're in the hospital, it's not just a COVID exposure that's gotten a little bit worse for you, but how accurate are the numbers? There's always been questions about the numbers, even if they're coming from a hospital.
The hospitalization numbers are probably going to be fairly accurate because the hospitals, if someone comes in there and they're diagnosed with it, they're going to report that. You know, there's been some concern about people going in for one thing and then testing positive incidentally for COVID-19. But I think that's going to be a low enough number that it's not really going to skew. It's not going to skew the trends. The trends are really what we care about. And we are seeing an increase in hospitalizations. But I think it's also important to remember that we're also seeing a very blunt mortality spike that comes with these spikes in cases in hospitalization. We've recorded two spikes, one early on around April and another one in the summer around June, July, that time frame. The peak average mortality from the early spike to the later spike decreased by about 46%. So we've really blunted the mortality of this thing. We've really cut the fangs of it.
Well, I can't leave the hospital issue without pointing out, and you certainly know as well, that if hospitals document that they are now treating a COVID patient, they get additional money. And if they put them on a ventilator, they get additional money. So there's still a reason for some hospitals and facilities to decide, we're going to book them in under COVID. We're going to get the extra money. And if we think, we might put them on a ventilator. I hate to be that crass about it, but that's what a lot of people are seeing happen, and there's a good financial reason for the hospitals to do so. Not saying they all do.
Right, but, you know, I'm not too familiar with the payment schemes for that. I haven't been paying attention to that end of the situation. But I will say that doctors don't want their patients to die. They take it very personally, and they take it as a professional affront as well. And it seems like putting patients on ventilators increases the risk of mortality is one of the things that we've learned the hard way from the beginning of this pandemic.
So if you put, let me stop you. So if you put them on the ventilator, maybe too early and not necessary, then you're actually increasing the chance of death, or at least increasing complications?
Potentially. The ventilators, it helps you breathe, but forcibly ventilating someone's lungs is a very invasive process and it increases the inflammation. And we're seeing that the inflammatory cascade is what's driving a lot of the mortality. So if you increase the inflammatory response, you're going to make it much more difficult to come off of that ventilator and increase the risk of dying as a result.
So where do we stand on vaccines? We're getting different information. Of course, President Trump says it's coming, going to be here soon. Dr. Fauci's last word, maybe by the end of June or July, and then we still won't have it for the whole nation until the end of 21. What's your understanding?
Well, nobody really knows exactly when it's going to get approved. So really both sides are more or less correct. At the very earliest, we can get approval mid-November. That's the very earliest that we can get it. I think it's Pfizer was already producing vaccines, and they're getting close to possibly getting an approval. Moderna, I believe, is in the same boat, but that's very optimistic. I think I think later 2020 would be more realistic, but first quarter of 2021, I think, is probably when the approval will come out. And then once that happens, they already have the distribution and logistics chains ready to set up.
So I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was going to say, first half of next year, I think we're going to have a vaccine that's going to start getting out to everybody.
All right. And reference the mask and so forth and concern about the fall and additional influenzas or even COVID resurfacing. Lock down the nation again? Shut everything down again? I mean, is that a wise decision? And allude to that? Go ahead.
It's really not. What we're also seeing is that the government-imposed lockdowns didn't really drive behavior so much as personal decisions. What we're seeing is people tend to behave in a similar manner across different states, across different territories, based on the number of cases in their community rather than based on the government-imposed restrictions. So having a lockdown didn't really do very much other than prevent people from doing things that they would be able to, that they would see that they're capable of doing. And really, I think the better choice would be to present all the information, make it as clear as possible, and be honest about it, and let Americans make the decisions for themselves. If anyone has a high-risk person in their family, they're probably going to behave differently than a college student living on his own in the middle of a... Yeah.
And understandable. And that's, you've been listening, Dr. Kevin Pham, and you conclude the article, and I like you to say it's no longer March. It's time we start acting like it, and we have made some progress. We're more so than what we've been told. Dr. Pham, I do appreciate you taking time to be with us, sir.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me.
We'll do it again. Dr. Kevin Pham, the Heritage Foundation. And again, he's saying we've learned a lot about COVID, and it's not like it was before, and we should look at what we're learning on the positive side. Coming up, how the Girl Scouts tried to praise Justice Barrett getting on the Supreme Court and how they had to withdraw their praise, and the actress who says, my child will determine if they are a boy or a girl. Coming up.
You can hear podcasts of this program at Larry Connors USA Facebook. Larry Connors USA Facebook. This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
So the Girl Scouts had put out a social media post on its official Twitter and Facebook pages congratulating Amy Coney Barrett on her appointment to the U.S. Supreme Court. The post featured an image of her and her two Supreme Court colleagues, Associate Justices Kagan and Sotomayor, former Associate Justice Sandra Day O'Connor, late Associate Justice and Barrett's predecessor, of course, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, and stated in the caption, congratulations, Amy Coney Barrett, on becoming the fifth woman appointed to the Supreme Court since its inception in 1789. And it ended with those, what do you call them, emojis, what do you call them, emojis? Oh, I don't even use them. If you ever get a text from me, Quentin, and it has one of those, I've been hacked, and I would never use one, never. I'll think of, I know We all know what I'm talking about. I just know what I'm talking about. But anyway, hands all raised up. That's what it was showing. And immediately, here came the political correctness left. Congresswoman Presley, Democrat, Massachusetts. What kind of patch does one earn for uplifting a woman who is the antithesis of justice? Another Twitter user said, I'm a lifetime Girl Scout. I'm ashamed of that post. Said, R.A. felt uneasy as a trans person in this organization. Now I really understand with this message, Girl Scouts really does not support me or my trans LGBTQ siblings. The Girl Scouts issued a statement saying, the post was viewed as political and partisan. That was not our intent. We are non-political, non-partisan. We're neither red nor blue, but Girl Scout green. Another one said, I'm going to take my business elsewhere. I'll take my $100 I was going to spend on the Girl Scout cookies, and I'll make my own. You know, all they're doing is congratulating. And one conservative one, there were on the other side. One conservative woman saying out, I'm not going to trash the Girl Scouts when I don't agree with things that are against my beliefs. But boy, you cannot cross the left. If you cross the left, you've gone far, far too far. So against that backdrop, we have an actress, pregnant actress, and a model, Emily Ratajkowski. Beautiful woman. Beautiful. And she's a woman, believe me. And she's pregnant with child. And she was writing a piece for Vogue magazine and saying, when my husband and I tell friends that I'm pregnant, their first question after congratulations is almost always, do you know what you want? We like to respond that we won't know the gender until our child is born. Oh, no, they don't say that. Let me correct that. We won't know the gender of our child until we see it on a test. No, they don't say that. You know what she said? We won't know the gender until our child is 18, and the child will let us know if the child is a boy or girl. Do you understand that? They're going to let the child decide if it's a boy or girl. Now, how are they going to raise it? I mean, are they going to consider, if the child biologically comes out as we all biologically see, that's a girl? And if it's a child that comes out that has, as I remember, one of my daughters said, the ugly things, if he has that, then that's a boy? Well, what are they going to do at that point? And so from that point till 18, and then the child can declare, I am woman, hear me roar. Or, I am man and I'm happy. You know, whatever. You know, people buy into this stuff. That's the problem with this thing. They just absolutely jump in and say, that's a good idea. That we don't, you know, let the child decide if they're going to be a boy or girl. And they can wait until they're 18. Then they'll look back over their past and say, you know, all those dresses I was wearing that I liked and dancing and everything, I don't want to do that anymore. I'm going to be a boy. Well, biologically, you are a girl, but no, I'm going to be a boy. Okay, we're all with it. This transgender ideology, I'm looking at an article written in Breitbart, and I'm going to attribute it to them because it's their statement, and I agree with it, but I want you to know where it's coming from, and Breitbart is obviously conservative. It says the transgender ideology has run amok through U.S. commercial culture, but an increasing number of Americans, including gays and lesbians, are now speaking up for biology, freedom, and decency against the trans-aggressive identity politics ideology of gender. That's a mouthful of words, but basically saying enough. Enough of this. You think you're going to run into one of your friends, they're pregnant, and you're going to say, is it going to be a boy or girl? Well, we won't know until they turn 18. What's going to be your reaction? I tell you what, you go to Larry Connors USA Facebook, you pull up this program, Mark it on your calendar. Pull it up. Say, listen to this. Hey, I appreciate you joining us. We'll be back tomorrow. You know that. We'll be here for you. Book it.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Thank you for listening to Larry Connors USA. Please listen to previous and future podcasts.